known creatures in the whole universe with the ability to think. But we keep on thinking, how many lies and how much we buy and sell. And more of paradise is lost, and only time will tell what will become of Mother Nature in the coming years, when we will have about 10 billion neighbors on this planet.
Welcome back to Eco Talk, and we are talking about oil, gas, cars, electric, hydrogen, fuel cell vehicles, all in one show, and even a little bit more than that. We have a strange juxtaposition of events taking place today. By the way, we tape Eco Talk out of San Francisco a few days before the weekend, so we are doing this program on Wednesday afternoon, March 9th, so we are referring to some events that are taking place as we speak. Oil hitting record high prices, that price of barrel getting up to, I think, about $55 per barrel, and then it went down a bit. That's where we are right now. But the point is, it's getting up there, and it's probably going to keep going that way. There's calls for President Bush to tap into the reserves. Apparently, that's not going to happen, at least right away. But of course, you know, in America, we're just looking at short-time quick fixes. We're not looking down the road at longer-term solutions enough, of course. He is using the opportunity to promote, take a guess, clean coal technology. President Bush today visiting a research lab in Ohio, also talking about the need to create more domestic oil, drilling in the Arctic Wildlife Refuge, and also touting hydrogen cars. And one of the leaders in the hydrogen fuel cell technology has been GM, General Motors. And joining us now is Dave Bartmus. He's in charge of public policy, environment, and technology communications for GM. And we're going to, right after this interview, talk to someone who is one of the leaders at a sit-in taking place right now. Car sitters, they say. I think it's more like car squatters versus car squashers, if you will, because they're upset that the EV1, which was the first electric vehicle, is being crushed, and that people who have them and love them, you know, don't want to turn them over, but in fact that's what's happening. So, Dave, thanks for joining us. And
sure.
Again, this sort of two different things going on. On the one hand, you had a development that you announced this week about a step closer to the hydrogen economy, at least so far as it applies to vehicles. And then we'll talk about what's happening with electric cars, which look very promising originally, and some would say still is, but why is GM against promoting those and keeping them, you know, from being out there in the public?
Well, first of all, I think you talked about the long-term vision, and certainly hydrogen-powered fuel cell vehicles provide us with what we believe is the answer to long-term sustainable transportation. Ultimately, the long-term fuel of choice will be hydrogen, and vehicles that are powered by hydrogen will provide clean transportation when they are generated by renewable resources. Certainly what is happening with the EV1 vehicle, the last lease of the EV1 vehicle expired in August of last year, was a very important program to get us to where we are today and where we need to go to tomorrow. Certainly General Motors is committed to making sure that its vehicles are as efficient and as clean as possible and using innovation and technology to reduce the amount of fuel that our vehicles consume, ultimately the emissions, until we can get to the day when hydrogen-powered fuel cell vehicles will be commercially viable. The EV1, I think what's happening in Burbank, you know, is very much illustrates our experience with the EV1 program. The EV1 lessees, enthusiasts, supporters, if you will, are extremely passionate, extremely loyal, and extremely enthusiastic. However, there were never enough of them at any given time to make it a viable business proposition for GM to pursue that technology long term.
Now, they say that, of course, there were not enough made to meet demand, so we'll get your perspective and then theirs on, you know, what really happened.
Sure. I mean, I tell you, you'll hear that, well, there were only 800 leases because we only made 800 of them. We made 800 vehicles. Basically, we made two batches of 500 vehicles, and that's because there just was never any long-term demand to keep the plant in Lansing, Michigan going. You know, the plant operated at 8% capacity at any one time. And again, from 1996 but to roughly the year 2000, after spending well over $1 billion, we were only able to lease 800 vehicles in a four-year time frame.
I recall, though, not seeing any, you know, commercials about this. This was a truly groundbreaking vehicle that really could make a difference. You know, it could be argued, I suppose, that you didn't really put enough resources into developing the infrastructure and demand or give it enough time to really genuinely say, you know, this just did not catch on with the American public.
Well, I know that the advertising campaigns that GM had for the EV1 earned awards. I have seen the advertising schedules, and we spent 10 times the amount of money in advertising and special event promotions and marketing to really build that vehicle that we would normally spend on any other vehicle launch. We targeted California. We targeted a warm weather climate. We provided money to the state, developed the inductive charging system. We spent well over $1 billion. And what we really need to do is put advanced technologies on vehicles that we can sell in extremely large numbers, heavy volume, to make it a viable business proposition for GM, and also to really make a difference in terms of environment and energy issues. That's why we're putting hybrid systems on the models that, A, consume the most amount of fuel, and that we sell in the heaviest volume, full-size pickup trucks, mass transit, large SUVs, and ultimately going to hydrogen-powered fuel cell vehicles that really rely on renewable resources of hydrogen to really remove the vehicle from the environment and energy debate. And a lot of the technology in the EV1 is finding its way into hybrids and will ultimately find its way into fuel cell vehicles. So without the EV1 program and the EV1 experience, we would not get to a viable hydrogen economy.
Well, I'm sure those who are not wanting their EV1s to be taken away will get some small comfort in knowing that it wasn't completely a waste. But speaking of waste, are you actually crushing and destroying them? And why are you insisting on doing that? Why not let them, those who want them so badly, keep them?
Well, there are four things can happen to an EV1 when it comes to the end of its lease. And, again, the last lease has expired in August of 2004, last year. Vehicles go to museums and universities. So for museums for display purposes, universities for engineering students to learn about the technology. They can refurbish it into a hybrid. They can refurbish it into a fuel cell, a diesel, or refurbish it into another electric vehicle. So they can learn more about advanced technologies. Museums, of course, for display. We also provide these vehicles to our engineers in the Northeast, in New York, so they can learn how the technologies can operate in cold weather climates. These are the same engineers that are building our fuel cell stacks in Honeyway Falls, New York.
I think a lot of people who are proponents of electric vehicles would just say, you know, their garage is a better place for, you know, the nation's first electric car than a museum. You know, why should we turn this into a dinosaur when the need is greater than ever, even, you know, since 1996 when it was first introduced, to have vehicles like this? And if there really truly is demand, is it something GM would consider bringing back, given the state of our world right now?
Again, we see a heck of a lot more demand for hybrids and ultimately fuel cell vehicles. We were told about long waiting lists. We saw we had a list of roughly 4,000 to 5,000 people. We contacted those folks. We told them what the vehicle would do in terms of range, how long it would take to charge, you know, what you needed to do to put the charging system in your home. That list, after communications, was whittled down to about 50 people that were willing to sign on the dotted line. There are many reasons that the vehicles, just take the vehicles that are stored at the Burbank facility, should not be, that we have decided not to allow them to be sold. That vehicle has 2,000 unique parts on that vehicle. Some of them are safety related. There's an electronic control module that controls the braking systems. It was developed using basically 286, you know, computer technology. The parts suppliers that supplied the parts to General Motors left us in 1997 or 98 when we weren't able to order parts in heavy enough volume to make it a viable business proposition for them. And, of course, the EV1 is not a vehicle for shade tree mechanics. This is not a vehicle that you can work on your own, because it does have the advanced technologies at the time. The time for us has moved on to put those technologies into hybrids, put those technologies into fuel cell vehicles, and learn from the EV1 experience.
Okay, and we are going to talk to one of the organizers of that vigil in our next segment. But they challenged the no demand, you know, claim, and they say even very recently they had, you know, there's these 80 or so EV1s left, and in 48 hours they said even offering these cars to people who want them without any warranties and without any guarantee of parts, they had some, they had 80 orders in 48 hours, I believe, is what they found.
Well,
so
again,
there's demand there.
Yeah, again, we need to look at vehicles where there are extremely high-volume solutions, high-volume demand, hundreds of thousands of units, millions of units. Again, the EV1 loyalist group illustrates the market out there, very passionate, very enthusiastic, and loyal, but simply not large enough for GM to pursue long-term.
Okay.
And again, our choice is not to put a vehicle on the road where we do not have safe sufficient supply of parts, that it's just not something that we believe is the right thing to do.
Do you think if more Americans were educated about the costs of, you know, gas guzzling, and not just in terms of environmental but health and economic costs, more Americans, in fact, would be more passionate? Maybe people have just not connected the dots enough yet.
Well, I don't know. I mean, that is the $64,000 question. When will fuel economy, fuel efficiency, and other kinds of environmental and health concerns become important when it comes to buying or leasing cars and trucks? Certainly safety has evolved to that point. So I believe that we very much might be in that stage where airbags or seatbelts were a while ago. And there, you know, safety is now one of the main important things that automakers point to when they market vehicles, one of the main things that people look to when they buy vehicles. Mm-hmm. You are now seeing more fuel economy messages creeping into advertising. You're seeing more hybrids being offered. So I do, and with the gasoline prices, as you were talking about earlier, continue to rise. I think that is going to become more and more of a buying equation when people go and look for a car or truck.
Okay, we have 30 seconds left, Dave. When can we see GM's first hybrid and first hydrogen car, most likely?
Well, the first hybrid vehicle has been on the road since August of last year. We have full-size hybrid pickup trucks, and when it comes to fuel cell technology, our goal is to have a viable, commercially viable hydrogen fuel cell technology system ready by 2010, and working diligently with governments to get that refueling infrastructure going so that those fuel cell vehicles can be mass marketable.
Thanks a lot. Dave Bartmus with General Motors. We'll be right back.